So, welcome to the Functional Data Structure lecture. So, it's me again. Next week it will probably be Tobias, and I think the last lecture will again be me. So, swapping around a bit, sorry for that. We will finish priority queues today. So, last lecture. First of all, any questions? Okay, so last lecture, we introduced priority queues, and we simply modeled priority queues as a multi-set of elements that have a linear order, and the operations were insert an element, empty queue, checking whether the queue is empty, and retrieve a minimum element of this multiset and delete a minimum element from this multiset. These were the operations, and one data structure that is suited to realize these operations is a heap. So a heap was simply a tree where each node is smaller than all its successors. And this guarantees that you will find the minimum node. So if you say smaller or equal than its successors, then you will find a minimum node at the root of the tree. So you have very quick access to a minimum node. The only thing is how to realize the other operations, like insert or delete the minimum node, then you have two trees. And for that, we discussed two options. One option was to do a merge. So if we define the operation given two heaps, that merges them to a single heap. And yeah, with this merge, you can obviously implement insert by just merging a singleton tree. And you can obviously implement delete by removing the root node and merging its two successors. And for merge, we discussed leftist trees. Leftist trees had some balancedness criterion based on the rank that we defined as how often can you go right. And with this balancedness criterion, we could guarantee that these trees have always logarithmic height in their size. At least logarithmic rank in their size, and we define the merge function to be linear in the rank. So it descended always to the right, and the criterion was the rank is the right one. So these were these leftist trees. And this was this criterion. The rank of a left child is greater than or equal to the rank of the right sibling. So somehow it's somehow you have to somehow imagine if you are at a node and you go always right, or you go one left and then right. Okay. So this was this balancedness criterion, and we could show that this is enough to get the desired complexity. And as a next option, we discussed Brown trees. The idea for Brown trees was to not store any additional information at the node. So the leftist trees, we needed to store the rank of a node at the node in order to restore balancedness if nodes got unbalanced. So we always kept track of the rank of a node and annotated this to the node. Well, this is one word of extra information per node. If you don't want that, you can try Brown trees. So for Brown trees, the criterion was that the sizes of the two subtrees do not differ too much, do not differ by more than one. And I don't have forgotten which one of the trees is, the right tree is always the smaller one. So the sizes differ by at most one, and the right tree is always the smaller one. And yeah, with this criterion you can again show that this is enough enough to have a exponential relation between height and size. And the nice thing is you can at least the operations that insert or delete one element, you can arrange them in a way that they preserve this invariant. Because if you insert into a subtree, then you can just swap the subtrees and the invariant is preserved again. If you delete from a subtree, you can just swap the subtrees and the invariant is preserved again, as long as you can arrange it to insert into the right subtree or delete from the left subtree. So you have to arrange the operations accordingly. Yeah, and here for Brown trees we did not implement a merge, but we implemented an insert and delete min explicitly. So the insert just did this swapping and inserts always into the right subtree, as we said. So we have to insert one element and we insert it into the right subtree. And the delete min, well, there we use the standard technique that we are used from heap sort. Or as a modification of this. So we exchange the root element with the leftmost element in this heap. We choose the leftmost element because to preserve our invariant we can remove from the left subtree. So if we choose the leftmost element we remove only from left subtrees. So we swap the root with the leftmost element, then remove the leftmost element, and this restores the invariant if we do the swapping upon removing the leftmost element. And then, well, we have an element at the root that may be too big. It usually will be too big because we just took it from the bottom of the heap and move it to the top. So it will be big. And then we do the sift down operation. So we swap we swap this element with one of its children as long as the heap property is restored. Yeah, so sift down, we just have to check which is the smaller children, and we have the node where the element is, and we have two children, and we take the smallest of these three and swap it with the root. If the root is the smallest, we are done. Otherwise, we take the smallest of these two and swap it with the root, and then we recursively do a sift down on the modified subtree. And this will restore the heap property, because it's you can imagine as there's one element that is too big and you propagate it down until it is it has arrived at its correct position. Okay. So this is where we stopped last week. Any questions? Okay. So now this is just one slide. Of course we can sort. We can implement sorting algorithms with a priority queue. Heap sort is the most prominent example here. And in general, so in a functional setting, we can do it like this. So if you're not interested in some in situ properties, like for heap sort, so heap sort has a nice property. You can implement it without needing any additional storage. except perhaps for a constant storage. You do not need to copy the array or whatsoever. You can simply sort inside this array. Well, in a functional setting, this is not that realizable because we don't have a notion of copying something or so. We can just if we have a list and we want to sort the list, we can start with a heapy file phase. So we just insert all the elements in our priority queue. This is this pq function. It simply folds. It's simply a fold over insert, so it inserts all the elements into the priority queue. Well, and then we can remove the minimum element from the priority queue as long as we have elements in the priority queue. And this is this min s function. So the pq function takes a list, builds up a priority queue. The min s function iteratively removes the minimum element from the priority queue and prepends it to a list. So we get a sorted list. Yeah, and the complexity is of course n log n if each of the priority queue operations takes time log n. And yeah, this is a abstract idea between the abstract idea behind, for example, heap sort. The concrete idea of what makes heap sort so nice is that you then can use nice implementation technique to actually get it in a single array. And a bit of these implementation techniques have been in the homework, but I have not complete heap sort just as we just did. Yeah.
On the slide, where does H
There is H. This comes from a typo. Sorry for that. It's just a typo. Of course, it must be Q. So, at some point, we called the heaps H. Then we changed it to Q in the lecture. Well, here you see the result. So this obviously has not been generated from Isabel function. This obviously has, we have written it, maybe we have checked that it is a well-typed term, but we have not, it's not the actual definition. Sorry for that. Thank you for remarking it. The nice thing on heap sort is that you use nice implementation techniques to have it in an array. As I said, who is looking for a project extends this bonus homework that we have to heap sort. Might be a nice project. next one is binomial heaps. Who has heard of binomial heaps already? Nice. So maybe you get the basic, idea, or already know the basic idea. Okay. So, as a general method is called numerical method, and the idea is we only use trees of a size that is a power of 2. So first question, why can we express we are allowed to use a list of trees, and each tree must have a size that is a power of 2, and there must be no two trees with the same size. Well, obviously this somehow corresponds to the value of numbers in a number system. So, if we want to store the binary number 11001 elements as a list of such trees, well, of course, we can just store a tree of size 1, a tree of size 8, and a tree of size 16. and we are done. Or a tree of size. So if you read this as a binary number, then you see which tree sizes you have to store. So now our data structure will be a list of trees, and each tree will have a size that is a power of 2. And, well, this list will be ordered in ascending order. So we store the number somehow reverse. So the least significant digit is at the front and not at the end. That's just implementation technique. This will be our invariant. So we only have trees that are trees with the size that is a power of 2. And they have to come in ascending. So the rank of this tree, so the rank is this, is the power. The rank of these trees has to be ascending. So there's, for each number, there's a unique way which tree sizes to choose for each number of elements. So, yeah. In this case, if we have a tree with this number of elements that I have to translate to decimal, I don't know what is it. 8 plus 16, 25 probably, but maybe I'm wrong. So if you have this number of elements, there's only one way to store them, namely with this collection of trees. So this is somehow the general idea. And now if you want to do a merge, this is simply an addition. So let's say we want to merge 2 trees with 25 elements each, and we want to get a new tree. So I just write it like this, but of course I mean that these numbers here are trees that have actually have elements. So you all remember the algorithm that you used in school. Well, in school you use it for decimal numbers. Let's use it for binary numbers. So you all remember this algorithm. So what's the digit that I put here? Well, it's a 0, but I get a carry. And there I am. So you all remember this algorithm. This is the same algorithm we will now use to merge trees. But instead of simply putting a number here, we have to deal with trees. So as I said, these are not numbers, these are some trees. This is a tree of rank 0, this is also a tree of rank 0. This will be a tree, 0, 1, 2, 3 of rank 3. So now we have trees. And we, as I said, a heap will be a list of trees. So now we have 2 lists of such trees. And we have to produce a new list of such trees. And this list of trees has to satisfy again the property that it's in ascending order and contains no duplicates. Let's do the same algorithm. What to do here? So we have 2 trees of rank 0. Yeah, we somehow have to merge them to get a tree of rank 1. And so we somehow merge these two and get a tree of rank 1. So first of all, you put a 0 here. There's no tree at position 0 anymore. And here we get some tree of rank 1. Some result, let's call them R for result, some tree of rank 1. Okay, this one is clear. We can put this tree here. There's nothing to merge. We get a 0. We get a 0. And now I have two trees of rank 3. Well, I construct a tree of rank 4 by merging these two. And now I have 3 trees. And now I actually have a choice how to do the algorithm. Either I do this standard full adder algorithm that has to distinguish some cases here, so that you get this standard full adder table that has three inputs and two outputs. This would be quite clumsy to implement it with trees. So the what we do here is in our recursive function, we first add these two trees and ignore the carry. And then, if we have the result, we will add the carry upon returning from the recursion. So we will first add these two trees. This will first give us a 0 here. And we will get the next carry here, some R5. We will put the R5 here. And upon returning from the recursion, we will evaluate the carry. this will be more or less hand-waving explained the algorithm that we have to do on merge. Yeah, so one crucial function is how to combine two trees of the same size. And it's important that these two trees have the same size. Okay, that's our tree data type. So the trees that we are using are not binary trees, but it's trees with arbitrary many successors. So a node can have arbitrary many children. So it's a list. It's a list of trees that we store as children. A leaf node simply has an empty list there. A binary node would have only lists of size 2 and of course empty lists at the leaves. So this is our data type. So, and the invariant is, so this is this data type, you can store arbitrary trees in this data type where you have arbitrary number of successors at each node. And the invariant is that the node of rank R has children of ranks R minus 1 to 0. So, let's say this is a node of rank 2 or of rank 3. This is a node of rank 3. Then this node of rank 3 must have children of rank 2, rank 1, and rank 0. A node of rank 2 must have children of rank 1 and of rank 0. And a node of rank 1 must have the children of rank 0. Well, rank 0 has no children. And so on. So you can continue this game for rank 4, rank 5, and so on. Question: how many nodes does a tree of rank n have? Two to the n. So in this case it's 8, if I have not made any mistake here with drawing. And it's a straightforward induction to show that it's two to the n nodes. So we can just sketch this induction. We want to prove that it's 2 to the n 2 to the n nodes. So for a node of rank, we do an induction on the rank from the rank of this tree. So we want to show size of t equals 2 to the power of rank of t. So we do an induction on this rank of the tree. So if we have the rank equals 0, well, we have one node, the zero node has no successors at all. And if you have rank of t equals n plus 1, well, what is the size? What is the size of this node? What is the size of this tree? Well, we have the size of t is, well, we have the root node of the tree, and for each rank from n to 0, we have a subtree of this rank. By induction hypothesis, and you've all seen what this formula evaluates to, and we are done. You all know that if you add up the powers from 0 to n, you get 2 to the n plus 1 minus 1. And that's what I used there. So you can easily see that these trees must have size 2 to the 2 to their rank. So this is the invariant this is the invariant as written in Isabel. So it says for all subtrees, all children must satisfy the invariant again, and the ranks of the subtrees must be zero to one smaller than the rank of the original tree, and here we store the trees, and it will become clear why we do it. Here we store the trees in order, in descending order. So we store the most significant, the highest rank first in the list. Remember that at the root of the heap, we store the highest rank last and the smallest rank first. Here we do it the other way around. And this is just an implementation trick to avoid expensive list operations in the implementation. So it's simply for the roots, for the heaps themselves. It's easier to iterate from the least significant to the highest significant digit, as our addition algorithm does. We start at the least significant digit and iterate to higher significant digits. So, for lists to be efficient, we have to store the least significant one first. For children of our trees, as we will see in a moment, we need to add high trees of high rank to these lists. Yeah, as adding is most efficient if we do it at the front, we store it the reverse way around, so that we can efficiently add a tree of a high rank. Okay. So this is what you can easily see. How to combine two trees of rank I into one tree of rank I plus 1. So this is the operation that I need. I have two trees of rank 0 or rank 3, and I have to combine them to a new tree of rank 4. Or rank 1, preserving this invariant. So I have a tree, let's say, of rank 3. And I have another tree of rank 3. How to combine these two trees? Hint, in constant time. Yeah?
You compare the root, and which root is bigger, you simply link it to the smaller root.
Exactly. So, of course, I want, I have not yet said that, but of course, I want these trees to have heap property. In order to combine these two trees, I can either link it like this, or I can link it like this. But the main idea is, if I do this link, so if I simply link this tree of rank 3, put it here, then I get a valid binomial tree of rank 4. And this is the main idea. This is why we use this, why we use this invariant here, because we can efficiently combine two trees, link two trees. So I can put, I can have a tree of size 3, and I can put another tree of the same rank as the first children, and I get a tree of rank 4. Yeah, and of course, as we want to retain the heap property, we put the one with the smaller root on top, and the one links the one with the larger root below it. This is the code for it. So we do the comparison and check which one goes where. Okay. So now, for a binomial heap, as I said, we store a list of trees. Right now, we also had these zeros there. Well, we simply do not store the zeros. We use a so-called sparse representation of binary numbers. So instead of storing the zeros, we store the ranks with the trees. Well, the ranks are already annotated to the trees, so we don't even we would not even need these pairs, but we could simply store the trees, because we can read off the rank of the tree at the root of the tree. Remember, we stored them there. We stored the ranks there. So this is just another representation. So we simply store a list of trees sorted in ascending rank order. Yeah, so it's a list of trees with the invariant that all the trees are heaps. All the trees are binomial trees, so they satisfy their invariant, and this list is sorted by strictly ascending order. So it's strictly ascending. Okay. Any questions at this point? So now we have these binomial trees. We have a method how to link two trees together, retaining the invariant, and we have a rough idea how we want to implement merge, namely by somehow implementing the standard addition with carry algorithm. Okay, let's go into more detail. So, like this. So this is what we do if you want to handle a carry. Or you can see it as increment some number, not by one, but by the carry. So the intuition is we have, again on binary numbers, we have a number, let's say 1, 0, 0, 1. This is the result of our addition. the number continues here. Remember our algorithm, if we add two numbers, our algorithm recurses. So here are two numbers that we want to add. Our algorithm starts here, recurses here, and as it goes back, it handles the carries. This is what we want to do. So let's say we are at this position in the algorithm, so on its way back. It has already computed this result, and it has remembered a carry here. What to do now? Well, we have to somehow increment this binary number again. So we have to do another increment operation here. So the algorithm goes back, seeing the carry, it goes forth again, and handles the carry. But this time it doesn't have to add two numbers, but it just has to do the simpler increment by one operation. So increment this number here by one. Of course, this digit, the number continues here, so this digit is not necessarily significance one. It may be some higher significance, but from on digits it simply add one. Yeah, so when our algorithm returns, it has computed this result so far. What it will do at this point, if it has remembered a carry, it will use this insert tree subroutine to insert the carry to this result. So it will again do an addition like this, and then the algorithm will continue with this result, continue for return to the next recursion level. This is somehow what we want to do. So we need a subroutine like this, increment by one. So this is how we do it. Remember, it's sparse binary numbers. So how do we increment by one? Well, if the rank of t1 is less than the rank of t2, so we are somehow in this situation. We have a carry which is t1, and we have the number that we want to add, which is ts t2. I'm doing it in reverse, so I'm remaining this order here. Sorry for that. Okay, now there are two possibilities. Remember, we have sparse binary numbers. One possibility is we don't see the zeros, but we see them by the rank. So one possibility is the rank of this tree is actually smaller than the rank of t2, meaning that this number has a zero here. In this case, the result is, of course, I call it t1. That result is, of course, like this, and we are done. No carry to propagate. The other case is, these two have the same significance, so they have the same rank. Well, in this case, we have to put a zero here, meaning there is no tree of this rank again. And then, well, we get the carry here. So we have to add these, we have to link these two trees to produce a new tree, and then we recursively call our algorithm with this new tree and the remaining TS. That's what the second case does. It links the two trees and recursively invokes the algorithm. So this is increment. So it also keeps track of a carry, but just the carry, not adding two numbers, but it's somehow a simpler version, just propagating one carry. And it's adapted to these sparse binary numbers, so it has to do these comparisons whether whether it's actually a zero digit or whether it's a one digit, meaning a tree containing two to the power of its significance data elements. Okay, I hope I did not confuse you too much. Now comes merge. So merge is now the merge is now the addition. It's exactly the addition algorithm that you know from school, but the carry is handled afterwards. So, sorry, I forgot my pointer, so I'll use the mouse here. So these two cases are clear, so you add TS1 to 0, so empty list means all digits are 0, so you're done. This case is a symmetric one, and this case is an important one. So you have a digit, T1 and you have a digit T2, and the remainder. And you have to add them. Again, remember that we are storing sparse binary numbers. We may have the, there may be the case that the rank of T1 is strictly less than the rank of T2. In this case, the situation is something like, may I switch the direction and do the, I'll do it the same direction as here now. Maybe it was confusing to do it the other direction. So this is the, this is T1, and here I have the remaining trees. Well, now I have T2. And here I have the remaining trees of 2. And the significance of this is less than the significance of this, meaning I have a zero here. What does addition do? 1 plus 0 is 1, no carry, we are done. That's what happens here. So we put a 1 here, and then of course we have to add up the rest, but there's no carry. Yeah, so second case is a symmetric case. It's this case. And we have a zero here, symmetric case. We add up these two and recursively add up the rest. And the last case is an interesting one. Both ranks are equal. So we have T1 and we have T2. They have equal significance. And here's the rest. So now we proceed with two steps. First, we add up the rest. So first we add up the rest. We get some result for the rest. This is the first step. Then we link these two trees to get our carry that we would have here. So we link these two trees, and then we increment the TS by these two trees. So we use our insert tree to add the link of these two trees here, meaning we increment this tree by 1. So we again go over the result,
doing this insert tree, propagating, ending the carry. So that's how we do it in two steps. First step, just add up the rest. Second step, increment by one more or add one more tree to handle the carry. And we do this because it's simpler than implementing this full adder algorithm on trees, which would have much more cases. Okay. So yeah, this is the last one. First we recurse and add up the rest, then we produce the carry, and then we propagate the carry into the result with this ins tree method. Okay, any questions? Okay, yeah, so how do we get or delete a minimum element now? So the problem is the trees themselves are min heaps, but there's no order in between the many trees that make up our binomial queue. So in this root list, we have this list of trees at the root. There's no order in this list of trees at the root. So there's no other option if we want to get the minimum element. The only option we have is iterate over all roots. Well, but fortunately, there are not so many roots because, again, the number of roots is obviously exponentially related to the number of nodes. It's the same argument why a binary number representation can represent exponentially larger numbers. So these lists will be short in general. So we can simply afford to iterate over all the roots and get the minimum of it. Yeah, and we can also implement an operation that splits the tree, so that extracts the tree with the minimum element from the list. So we get a list of trees, and what is returned is one tree and the list where this one tree is removed. And this one tree contains the minimum element. So this is what we need to do, and in order to remove the minimum element, we will first remove the tree with the minimum element from the rest. Then we will remove the minimum element from this tree, and then we will merge the two things, the remainders. We will merge them again to get one heap. So,
what will happen?
So we have a list. We have a list of trees. These are some trees in our list with a scanning rank. So first, let's say the minimum element is in this one. So first step, we extract this one and the rest of the list. This is this get min rest. It will simply remove this from the list. So next, let's look, how does this tree look like? This will be something like it has a root. Let's say it's of rank, the root is of rank 4. Then it has a root, and there will be 4 nodes below of rank 3, 2, 1,
and 0. And let's say these ranks here are this has rank 1, this has rank 4, and this has rank 5. So we have rank 1 and rank 5 here. Okay, how to get... So we want to remove the root, because this is the minimum element. And then we want to get the rest together. What is the rest? Well, the rest is a list of trees from rank 3 to rank 0, and it's the remaining trees from the root list. How to get them together? Well, for implementation reasons, we have to turn it around here, because this now shall become a root list and not a list under a node. So we have to reverse the order. As I said, we store the root list in ascending order. Here we have descending order. So we flip this around. This gives a perfect binomial heap. So just flipping this around, we have a perfect binomial heap. We will have a list of binomial trees in ascending order of their rank. So we have two binomial heaps. We can merge them. And that's what happens. That's exactly what's implemented here. So we flip this around to restore the order expected at a root list, and then we do a merge. That's it.
Yeah, and that's the answer for why do we reverse. Because for technical reasons, we store these lists in the different order.
Yeah, and as I said, so we do this because for merge we need to recurse from the least significant digit to the higher digits, and for the link operation we put one of the trees below the other, and this tree had the highest rank among the roots of the others, so we had to insert a tree of high rank into this list. So we reversed the list such that inserting a tree of high rank is efficient, because it's inserting at the front and not at the end.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. What about the complexity? So, yeah, we know that the tree, that the size of the tree is 2 to the power of the rank. And similar for a heap, the length, 2 to the power of the length of this heap, will be smaller than the size. Well, we need smaller there because if all digits are, so we have the sparse binary numbers. If all digits are present, then we probably even have an equal there. If some digits are missing, we get the smaller than or equal. So not the length of the list is not exactly the number of digits, but it's only the number of ones. So that's why we get the smaller. Okay. So the complexity of the operations are linear in the length of the heap, while and this merge somehow depends on the height. And the proofs are, well, not really straightforward. There's one problem. Can you imagine what problem there might be if you do a naive analysis of merge? So why is the complexity of merge logarithmic in the length of the heap? Remember merge, it performs this addition. Not logarithmic. Why is this the complexity of merge linear in the length of the heaps? Yeah?
Because essentially you have to add one to 7 to 4, which you go back and over time you can have
but this might be a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
remember that we did the carry. Remember that we handled the carry in an R afterwards. So we did not implement this standard addition algorithm. So let's. So if you have the standard addition algorithm, let's say we want to add these two numbers. So the standard addition algorithm is obviously linear in the longer of these numbers, in the longer number. So you have one step per digit. You add these two digits, you add these two digits, you add these two digits, and you're done. This was linear. Now, what we are doing is we are somehow handling the carry in an afterglow. So we would not do it like this, but we would do it like this. So what we would do is we would add these two digits. We would add these two digits. We'll somehow remember there's a carry, but first ignore it. We would add these two digits. We would somehow remember there's a carry, but ignore it. And we would add, we are finished, and we have remembered the carry. Well, and then, in the next step, we put the carry here. Then, we have this number. We go back. We increment this number with this carry. And so on. This was a good example. There was no recursion. But what if the result here is 1? So, in worst case, we might have something like, it's hard to construct because we will, in a moment we will prove that this cannot happen. But in the worst case, we might have something like if we add a carry, so we have a carry here, and in the worst case, the number to the result which we have it to add looks like this. So on going back, we have already this number, and here we have a carry. So we have to go forth again, the whole way. And perhaps in the next iteration, we have the same situation, and we have to go forth again, the whole way. And perhaps in the next iteration, we have the same situation, we have to go forth again. This will give us some some quadratic runtime. So log n squared, but we don't want log n squared, we want log n. So we want linear, not quadratic time in these digits. So you can already imagine that what I try to construct cannot really happen. Imagine we somehow arrive at this situation. What will happen? Well, we increment the carry. If we propagate the carry, we need really many steps to do that. But afterwards, we are actually fine. The next carry that we propagate will definitely not need many steps. It will immediately stop here. So if in the next round, even if we have to propagate a carry in the next round, it will immediately stop here. And that's somehow the argument that we need to do. Whenever we propagate a carry, we produce zeros. So each step that actually propagates the carry to the right produces a zero in the list. And this zero will stop the next propagation. So this worst case that in every propagation you have to go the whole way through simply cannot happen. Yeah, and now we can try how to do it formally. So this is naive estimation.
we can any call of merge can lead to call of insert tree, and insert tree is we can only insert tree has the length of this list, so we somehow get a quadratic with this estimation, we somehow get a quadratic behavior, because we can in every recursion of merge we can call insert tree, and insert tree has to go through the whole result we already have, and that's somehow quadratic. It's a Gauss sum or something like this that we get. This is not what we want. So instead we do a little smarter estimation. So we relate the required time and the length of the result. So as I said, whenever insert tree does a step, it produces a zero. We don't store zeros, so the length of the result gives us a number of ones. So we can show that the time that insert tree takes and the length of the result plus the length of the result equals 2 plus the length of the input. So whenever insert tree takes many steps, the length of its result has to become small. If insert tree finishes immediately, well, then the length of the result can still be long. You see this relation? As more steps insert tree takes, as shorter the result must be. And that's exactly what was the intuition. As more steps propagating a carry takes, as more zeros it produces. That's exactly the intuition. Yeah. So we can actually prove this lemma here. And with this, we can do the same for merge. So also the zero, the number of zeros in the merge and the time that the merge requires, they correlate the same way. And we can prove this bound here. So as more work is done in merge, as smaller is its result length. Yeah. And we can prove this bound. Yeah, and if we have this bound, then we can have a sharp look at it and see that it will be that the time of merge is bounded by a linear bound. Even the time of merge plus its result length is bounded by a linear bound. So the time of merge is of course bounded linearly, if already this one is bounded. But we needed this more general bound to go through the recursion without getting this quadratic thing in. Okay, so this is just a trick that we used. Who of you has heard about amortized complexity? Potential function or potential method? Yeah, so it's nothing else as we did here in some hidden form. So the length of the list is somehow the potential of our data structure, and so it's in some disguised form the potential method that we did here. In next lecture, Professor Nipko will probably handle the potential method and amortized complexity formally. So I will not go too far here, just as a first application. So what we can say is that our insert tree requires amortized linear time and not amortized quadratic time. Okay. Yeah. Looks like we will finish early today. So, any questions? Okay. This is just some literature if you want to know about the history. So they have been invented in the 70s. Then Chris Okazaki has this book on purely functional data structures. It's actually his PhD thesis, and it was converted into a book later. And this is actually very very systematic way of handling implementation techniques for functional data structures. And he does not simply give a list of functional data structures and how to implement them, but he organizes them and analyzes general techniques that you can use there. Very interesting to read. And binomial trees are also handled in there. And there are also handled a few more advanced data structures. For example, he handles skew binomial heaps. So for skew binomial heaps, you can tune the complexity a bit more. Don't know how far I should go here. So the idea is the same, but instead of using binary numbers, you use so-called skew binary numbers. And a skew binary number, the idea is that you can have a two-digit. So usual binary numbers have 0 and 1 digits. And now you also allow a two-digit, but only one in the whole number. And this this trick then gives you an insert in time O of 1. So you can do an increment very efficiently. You can increment a skew binary number in time O of 1. And of course, if you can increment, you can exploit this to have an insert. This is mainly the trick. And the trick is somehow if you increment, and instead of propagating a carry, you simply put a 2 there. And then you have some structural invariance that it's actually constant. I won't go into details here. And another one is Fibonacci heap. And with Fibonacci heaps, you can even have merge in time O of 1. So we now have insert in time O of 1, merge in time O of 1, only delete min. Only delete min is time O of log n. So there are some tricks. These are some tricks to make it even more efficient. Ah, by the way, for skew binomial heaps, there's another trick called data structural bootstrapping, not the one with just storing the minimal element, but a much more complex one, by somehow storing a heap of binomial heaps, so somehow reflecting the structure into itself. You have to read it up in Okazaki if you want to understand it. And with this, you can also get skew binomial heaps to O of 1 merge operation in a functional setting. This is just some overview. I won't go into any details here. Just one question. Can we have every operation in O of 1? So we had started with the first iteration, insert, merge, and delete were O of log n. Then we can do the skew binomial heaps, insert is O of 1. Then we can do some more tricks, insert and merge is O of 1. Can we also get delete O of 1? Yeah? Yeah, there's a much more convincing argument than this. So the intuition also intuitively the merge operation cannot be time O of one because it somehow has to handle two heaps and somehow has to put them in relation. But then, well, the intuition is not that good if you look at Fibonacci heaps or this bootstrapping technique where you say, well, I can simply build a new heap with these two heaps as elements and then I have only one node and that's it. So, yeah? Yeah, that's the most convincing argument. If you have everything in time O of one, you could implement a heap sort in linear time, and we all know that you cannot implement sort in linear time. So this is simply not possible. Okay. So I will. We can have a quick look on the implementation of this whole thing. And for the next lecture, you can already think about this. So now not priority queue, but simply a queue. A queue has n, it's a first in, first out queue. So we have an n queue and a d queue operation. So in very simple data structure, no ordering, no priorities, just elements. It's a list, and we have NQ, and we have DQ. So, on one end we add, and on the other end we remove. Yeah. Imperatively, you can think of things like ring buffer or whatsoever, very easy to get at constant time, both operations. Can we do it functionally with lists? Okay. Let's have a short look at the implementation, and then we may finish early today. Yeah, so this is the implementation data type. So it's exactly this node data type. So the children, we have these children, which are a list of trees. And this syntax here, I'm not sure whether we've seen it or not, defined selectors. So if you have a node, you can write rank node or root node or children of a node. So this defines functions to these fields. Then of course we can define the multiset of elements. So this data type is a bit weird because the recursion in this data type goes through another data type. So it's the recursion somehow is not straightforward, but it goes through another data type. It goes through list. So the recursive occurrences are inside the list, so inside another data type. So for the multiset, we can simply sum up the multisets. of all the children. And for the heap, we can sum up the multisets of the whole heap. Yeah, and this is some. This here is multi-set, multi-set sums. This is some syntax magic to have a summation on a multi-set. So it's intuitively it sums up the result of the function in here for every element in this multiset. For every element t in the multiset, it sums up the result of this function applied to t. And if an element occurs twice in the multiset, it also sums up twice. And this is easier than somehow saying, well, we could convert the multiset to a set first, perhaps. Of course, we could also do things like fold over the list or whatsoever. So this should be pretty equivalent to summing to folding over the list C. So C is a list. It's again, if you have all these libraries, you have many ways of writing down the same thing. And we have the multiset library, so I wrote it down with the multiset library. If you don't have the multiset library or don't know it well enough, you could just do a fold over the list of the children and add up the multisets there. Would also work. The invariant is as it was on the slides. So it's the binomial tree invariant, so the ranks of the trees are exactly 0 to R. This also, of course, implies that there are exactly R subtrees. So the length of TS is exactly the length of this one, which is R. So ordering... So ordering is also no surprise, it's simply the heap property. So the element X is less than the roots of all its children. So this time it's a not the transitive one, but it's a local one. So it just says every node is smaller than the roots of its children. But of course, by transitivity, you get every node is smaller than all the nodes below it. And this proof has to be done somewhere here. But I think it's further down. Then the operations. This is the link operation as we had it. We can show that it preserves the invariance. The insert operation, or this insert tree operation, it's exactly as it was on the slides. Again, we have to show that it preserves the invariance. And there should be the precondition at some point. This is a precondition that the rank of what we insert must be smaller than or equal the rank of all the ranks or the lowest rank of the list we insert into, so we can propagate a carry only from the, so to speak, from the start. We cannot simply propagate a carry from the middle of the thing. The merge operation, exactly what was on the slides. And again, we can show that it preserves the invariant. You see, most of the proofs are straightforward here. Only a few times you need to do some case distinctions or so. But there are no really complicated proofs. This is get min, which is there must be the complicated one that I said. So at some point you have to show that get min implies that it's actually the minimal element of the whole multiset, but you only have these local orderings. So it's, you have to do some, you have to invest some idea here, but at the end it turns out to be an induction, induction on the tree structure. This was the same for the bonus, bonus homework that's due today. There's a similar, similar task. I think you have, at some point you have to, for the bonus homework, at some point you have to show that in these heaps represented by arrays, you find the minimum element at the front. Is it for the bonus or is it for the regular homework? Bonus, yeah. So there you will have to show that you, that H of zero, so the, at the first index is the minimum element. And, yeah, the argument is similar. You have to do an induction on this tree structure somehow. Well, induction on the tree structure in the array, you have to think how to do it. Here we can do induction on the tree structure, and then we get the reason, then we get the argument quite easily. Maybe here it's not that easy. Yeah, so of course the induction structure is not as easy as I say now, because the induction, technically the induction goes over this nested wait. No, this induction only goes over the list. So there must be a nested induction inside somewhere. Yeah, so there is a there's a nested induction. Inside, which is this one. So if you have an ordered tree, then you will find the minimum element at the root of this tree. And this is also simply an induction, induction on the tree structure. And then, so this is the first argument for a single tree, the minimum element is at the root. And this is the second induction for the list of trees that form our heap. This getMin will return the minimum element, because it returns the tree with the minimum element at the root. Okay. And the rest is again quite straightforward. And here we can instantiate it with a priority queue locale, and then we can do this complexity arguments. Oh, it's that complicated? Okay. So this quite large looking proof is a simple intuition that I sketched in 2 minutes on the board. I'm a bit surprised why it's that complicated. Perhaps it has been edited for verbosity instead. I think it could be done with 2 lines induct auto. But maybe it has been edited. It has been edited to be more to make explicit more steps. Yeah, it's the same for the size for the size of the whole heap. And then we can define the timing functions, which is straightforward. And the only thing that's notable here is that we have to do this. That we have to do this estimation here. So the time for insert is estimated together with the length of its result. This was exactly the crucial idea how to get the complexity proof done. As more work this insert tree does, as shorter its result will be. and it's less work. It's less work subsequent operations will do because the result is short. This is somehow the intuitive argument. Yeah, that's it. And then we can do the bounds. It's simply there's not nothing really exciting happening here. It's just getting these timing functions, proving them, and the proofs are. So at least the ideas of the proofs are quite straightforward. And that's it. So if you need an example how to do these timing bounds on a medium complex data structure, not actually easy one, this might be a good example. Okay. Any questions? Yeah, then see you either this or next week. It's not yet clear who does the tutorial today. But there will be a tutorial, definitely. But not yet sure whether I am do it. This will decide spontaneously. Okay, then see you perhaps in 2 hours, perhaps next week.